think what we'll do now is we'll try to do a quick review of this Haggadah, and we're on Daf Zayin. I'll tell you exactly where we want to start in just a minute. Let's start on the bottom of Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. And again, my goal for today is just to kind of put together all the different Gemaras that we've seen until now. So looking for Amar Rab Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amar Rab Yonasan. So if you're counting up from the bottom, it's about 10 lines up. Just let me know if you have the place. Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, 10 lines up. Yes? Okay? Alright. Amar Rab Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amar Rab Yonasan, Kol Dayan Shedon Din Emes Lamito. We have to realize that the process of judgment is not separated from the divine being. But Shenemar, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Elohim Nitzav Badas Kel, Bekerev Elohim Yishpot, that the judgment process is taking place Bekerev Elohim, in the presence of God. And therefore, if the judge is good to live up to his calling, to his responsibility, he's called Don Dim Emes Lamito. He judges in a truthful way. He's not influenced this way or that way, and certainly not by bribes and so forth and so on. Then he brings the Shekhinah into Yisrael. Now the flip side. V'chol dayin she'eino don din emes lamito. But if this judge deviates from justice and truth and he perverts the law, then Goreim, he causes L'shchina she'tistalik mi'Yisrael. Tistalik means that the Shechina completely departs from Israel. She'nemar, and here again quoting a pasuk in Tehillim, Mishod anim, if the poor people are being persecuted, because the assumption here is that in all likelihood this judge was paid off by the rich person, the rich litigant, and the one who stands to be decided to be liable and he has to pay is the poor person. And God says, Akum Yomar Hashem, Me'en Kasev Yonim, also for the crying out of the poor people, Ata now, Akum Yomar Hashem. God says, I will get up, which means I will scramble, I will get out of this place. You know, I'm packing my bags. The Omar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omar Rabbi Yonasan called Dayan Shenotel Mizeh Vinosein Lozeh. If he takes the money out of the pocket of one of them who really should have been exonerated in din, and he brings it and he gives it over to the pocket of the other one who doesn't deserve that money, is Hakadosh Baruch Hu Notel Mimenu Nafsho, God will take away his life. Shenemar al tigzol dol, don't steal from the poor. Ki dalhu, because he's destitute. V'al tidake oni b'shar. Now the word shar means a gate, and a gate is always associated with justice. Al tidake oni b'shar. Don't subjugate the oni, put him down at the gate of justice. Ki Hashem, the pasuk continues, this is a pasuk in Mishle. God, Yariv Rivam, God will fight their battles. V'kava es koveyem nefesh, and he will determine to take the nefesh. He will take, in this case, the nefesh, the life of the judge who did this. And if you remember, when we did this the first time, we pointed out that Rav Shmuel's statement is referring to a case where the judge actually took the money out of one person's hands and he put it into the other hands. That's called gezel. And that's why in theft, the pasuk here of Mishlei is addressing the case of theft. Theft is such a serious violation. It could be that in the case of a judge, it's even a more serious violation than normal, and therefore it's a capital crime. God will see to it that his nefesh is taken away. Another statement: Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omar Rav Yonasan, in the same tradition. Li olam. Always, Yira Hadayan Atzmo, a judge should see himself, Kilu Cherev, as if a sword, Munachaslo, is there situated Bein Yirei Chosov, between his legs in a very dangerous area, and the Gehenom Psuchalo Mitachtov, and the other place, not the heavenly place, is open below him. In other words, he's in a very precarious situation. If he doesn't take his judgment seriously, then the repercussions will be very swift and severe. And now we turn to Daf Zayin Amid Beis, Shed Nemar, a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Hinei Mitasol Shel Shlomo. Shlomo is considered not only a king, but also a judge. In many cases, judgment came all the way to Shlomo. And the pasuk describes Shishim Giborim, 60 very powerful warriors, Savivla, surround his bed, Mi Giborei Yisrael, amongst the heroes, the very forceful people of Israel, Kulam, and all of them, Achzei Cherev, they are holding on to swords, Melumdei Milchama, they know how to use these swords. Melumdei means they're well trained, Milchama, in battle. Ish Harba Yirecho Mi Pachad Balelot, there's a fear, Dafka at night, that's when the ambush happens, that these warriors might actually use their powers, and not only this is there a pachad here of the actual swords, but also mipachto shel gehenom shedome lelaila. Gehenom is the place where these evildoers are punished, and that's considered a dark, dingy, despairing place, and that's where the judge is being surrounded by all sorts of fears and possible destruction. There are very ominous, fearful threats to the judge because he has to take his judgment very seriously. Later on, the Gemara is going to talk about how he has to prepare for judgment, how he has to be very thoughtful in judgment and not to come to any rash conclusions. He has to weigh all the pros and the cons, the evidence this way, the evidence that way, until he finally comes to the decision. And once he's absolutely certain, then he hands down his verdict. Darash Rav Yoshia. Rav Yoshia interpreted a pasuk in Yirmiyah. And some say it wasn't Rav Yoshia, but rather it was Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. My dechsiv, what does the pasuk mean? Beis David, the house of David. Ko amar Hashem, dino la boker mishpat, that the judgment should be in the morning hours. Vatsilu, and the judges are commanded to save Gozel miyad oshek, the one who suffers, he's a victim of theft, and save him from his thief. In other words, make sure that you introduce a ruling that's just in order to save a person who doesn't deserve to lose his money, and protect him and save him. So the drasha of Rav Yoshi or Rav Nachman is the following: V'chiba boker donim. Why does the pasuk say that the judgment is in the wee hours of the morning? That's not so. Kol hayom ain't donim, and the rest of the day, the balance of the day until sunset, they don't judge. After all, judgment can be implemented during the entire course of the day. Ella, but rather, the word boker comes from the word livaker. The root of the word boker, we call it morning, is livaker. Livaker means to what?
To discern,
right? To scrutinize, right? In Bara Lecha Adavar, Ka Boker, it doesn't mean that it's during the morning hours, but boker is a symbol of clarity. You have to have clarity, and you have to be able to discern two colors that look very similar. Then you should say what you have to say, meaning you should hand down your verdict. But if you don't have that clarity, al tomreyu, don't hand down a verdict. If you have to recuse yourself, find another judge, maybe he'll be able to come to a conclusion. But if you're in confusion, don't think, I'm going to come to this verdict, that verdict. It's got to be dino la boker. So that's the key of understanding judgment. Rav Chiya bar Avraham, Rav Yonah Samehocha, he derives the same conclusion mehacha from here, meaning from a different verse, not from Yirmiyah, but rather from Mishlei. Emar lechachma achosi at. Shlomo Melech in Mishlei says, talk to chachma, to wisdom, as you would talk to a sister. Emar lecha dover, meaning if it's absolutely clear to you, ke achoscha, Just like you know that of all the women in the world that you could marry, the last person, the one who you certainly cannot marry is your sister. She asura lecha, she's prohibited for you. And there's no confusion. You know, we have women that are cousins and second cousins and granddaughters, I don't know what, you know. But here it's a case of a sister. The case of a sister is absolute clarity. Omreyu, then give down your verdict. Imlav, if you don't, you have a little bit of confusion about it, al tomreyu. Om Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Asara sheyoshvim bedin, 10 judges are sitting in judgment. Kolar tolui betzavar kulon, they have to know that there's a sword that is hovering over all 10 of them. Now, kolar is not really a sword; it's called a reshet barzel. And what they do is, when someone is caught in a criminal crime, they tie him up in this, you know, it's like today we have handcuffs. You've seen how they take an accused criminal into court with handcuffs if he's accused of a serious crime. Anyway, this is a kind of a way of conveying that a person who is sitting in judgment, he has to realize the weighty heaviness of his decision. He has a sense of intense responsibility. Pshita, the Gemara thinks that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is not adding anything. What was his chiddush? Lo tzricha, but we need it. Elo l'talmid ha-yoshe b'fnei rabba. A student is an apprentice. He's sitting in judgment in the court together with his Rebbe. He's learning how the Rebbe judges. And in this case, he thinks that he's just a spectator. He's nothing more than an observer. And yet, he sees that his Rebbe is making a mistake in judgment. He cannot remain silent. We're going to see this over and over again as we go through the Gemaras, that if a student is aware of the fact that his Rebbe missed something, whether it was a piece of information, whether it was a certain halacha, the student is obligated not to be inhibited, but rather to come forward and correct his Rebbe. And this is a big chiddush, because normally a Talmud should not be correcting his Rebbe, but in judgment, the severity, the responsibility of judgment is so heavy that he must come forward and he has to express his opinion. The Gemara now tells a story about Rav Huna. Rav Huna ki havi osi dina lekameh. A judgment came in front of Rav Huna. Michnaf means to gather, to assemble. Right? That's from the Shoresh in Aramaic called knifta or kanaf, means to assemble, to gather together. Umaisi, and he would bring Asora Rabbanon, 10 rabbis, Mibei Rav, from the Beis Medrash of the Chachamim, and he would have them join him in judgment. So Rabbo say, how many people would sit on the court after he gathered 10? 11, right? And that means that there's an odd number. Why did Rav Huna insist? According to that our Mishnah that we've been studying, the minimum number of judges is 3. He didn't have to gather together another 10. Omar, he declared, Ki hechi delim tayon shiba mikshura, which literally means if something falls down from the roof. In those days they used to have beams made of wood, and very often pieces of wood would shoot off from the roof and hit people. So he says, ki hechi, so that delimtayon means if it indeed falls, shiva, these pieces of wood or sawdust, mikshura means the beams on the ceiling, it should fall on one of 11 people. In other words, let's assume that it'll fall on more than one person. So you're spreading the responsibility. In other words, the damage here, this is what you call damage control. I want to make sure that if, heaven forbid, we're mistaken in judgment, and we weren't meticulous in judgment, and therefore God is going to punish us, the punishment will spread out, and it'll be equally distributed amongst 11 judges. Right? If it's smaller judgment, then there's going to be a more heavy punishment and responsibility on a smaller number of judges. The Rambam here has a different take on this Gemara. The Rambam interprets not that he was worried about punishment, but that he was worried about the... What do you say?
Wants to make sure there's at least 3 left.
That's good. But the Rambam says, well, he wants to make sure that there'll be enough deliberation and every single judge has his own perspective and he'll bring out his opinion, and then finally they'll be able to come to some clear-cut decision. Rav Ashi, another story about Rav Ashi. Kiavi Asi Treftok Lekame. Trefta means a suffix and a doubt about a trefa. So a yidna, a lady, brings a chicken and she asks Rav Ashi whether it's kosher or not kosher. Is michnef, he would gather together with Maisi and bring lehu together to him. Lekulu, all tabache, all the butchers, the Masa Machasi. Masa Machasi is a famous Jewish, heavy Jewish populated area in Babylonia, and there were many butchers. He would gather together the butchers and he would ask them together what their opinion was, because they were experts. They knew exactly how to shecht an animal, they knew exactly what was trefa, what was not trefa. Omer, he declared, ki hefi delimtaya shiba mikshura. This was apparently a common phrase, so that if the sawdust flies down from the rooftop or from the ceiling, it'll be spread, and the punishment will not be focused on me. But you see from all these stories in the Gemara how serious the Dayanim have to take judgment. The Chiddush of Rav Ashi is that even in what's called Horas Issa V'Heter, it's not a case of judgment, there are no litigants here. The question is, what's the story with this chicken? Even so, he has to be very serious about it. Ki Asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came, meaning he came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and Rav Dimi was one of the two most important Amoraim who were in charge of transmitting the Israeli tradition to Chutz Laretz, meaning he would bring the Torah from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Omar, one of the things he declared was Darash Rav Nachman Bar Kohen, a drasha of Rav Nachman in Eretz Yisrael. And now we're going to darshan, we're going to interpret a pasuk in Mishle. Ma'idatsi, what does it mean? Melech b'mishpat yamid Eretz. It means that the king himself is in charge of judgment and he's going to keep the world going. Right? He's Atlas. Who is it that holds on to the globe? Is that Hercules, Atlas? I forget. Atlas. He's the Atlas who's keeping the world on top of his shoulders. But the Ish Trumos, but someone who receives Truma, who receives Truma? Everybody who receives Truma? A Kohen? Is Yarsena. He will destroy the world. Now what's going on over here? If you're involved in Mishpat, in judgment, you'll keep the world up. Yamid Eretz, you're holding up the world. And if you're a Kohen, you're going to destroy the world. Says the Gemara, this is a drasha from Eretz Yisrael. Im Dayan Domil Melech. What is a Melech? A Melech, a king, is presumed to have access to a major treasury. He's got plenty of money to, you know, that he has access to. He's not going to be dependent upon anyone else. The king is the symbol of independence. So the Dayan should also be totally independent. He should not have to look around and find other Dayanim to try to agree with his opinion. He should be like a king. She'eino tzarech l'klum. The king doesn't need anything. He doesn't need, you know, anyone to kowtow and to yes-yes him and tell him, oh, you're doing the right thing. He is totally independent. And if somebody comes to bribe the king has so much wealth at his fingertips, he's not impressed by bribes. Yamid Eretz, such a Dayan who has independent knowledge and expertise, he can come to his conclusion on his own. He's going to keep the world going. Because the Mishnah says in Avos, Al Shlosha Dvarim HaOlam Omid, there are three things that keep the world going. One of them is Din, is judgment. However, the Imdoma L'Kohen, if this judge, so the whole pasuk is symbolic of a judge, if he acts like a Kohen, who's a Kohen? Is a Kohen independently wealthy? No. What keeps the Kohen afloat financially? He gets truma, he gets gifts. Right? There are 24 different gifts that we give to the Kohen. One of them, the primary one, is truma. Shemachazer, and he runs around the Beis HaGranos. In the granaries, you know, where people do winnowing. You know, that's after they gather in there, they harvest their crop, then they do winnowing. and then they have to be mafresh trumas and maisers. So they're looking around for a kohen. So the kohen goes from one place to the other. I have my favorite collector who comes to the shtiblach every Sunday morning. Why is he my favorite collector? Because what happens is he collects in two neighborhoods, in Har Nof and in Katamon. So inevitably, during certain days of the week, I give him tzedakah in Har Nof, and then he shows up in the shtibl, and I give him in shtibl, in Katamon. So we got to know each other a little. We became good buddies. So he's like a kohen, Nebuch. He has to go from one base grottos to the other. You know, they have it all calculated, by the way. It's a science. It's a discipline. They know exactly, they share calves, they know exactly which minion begins and which ends. It's really a science. And they do pretty well. Again, I'm not jealous of them, because that's double a kohen. The kohen has to show up in the base grottos, hops around from one base grottos to the other. And that's the case of a dayan who really doesn't know on his own, independently, how to decide a case. So he sends that on Facebook, he asks a question, what should you do in such a case? He's got his own WhatsApp group of judges. And that's not good. You know, a judge has to be independent, he has to rely on his own bekius, his own expertise, his knowledge. And then, if he's like that, then he really doesn't know what he's doing, Yehar Sena, he's going to destroy the whole world, because the world is built on justice. Now the Gemara tells another story. The Bein Nasiya, now the Nasi is the person who's in charge of all the Batei Dinim. He like oversees, supervises all the courts. And the Bein Nasiya means the bias, the place where the Nasi is located. And in one case, unfortunately, Ukmu means they set up, which means they appointed a judge, Dilo Havi Gomir. He was not well versed. He was not what you call a bucky in the law. Amrule. So what they said, the other people in this household, they made the following comment. They turned to Yehuda bar Nechemya, Mechud bar Nachmani. He was one of the greats of that generation. And what was Yehuda's job? He was what you call, what do you say?
Translator.
I guess you call it a translator. He was a meturgamate. Meturgamate doesn't necessarily mean translate, Jerry. What it could mean is what I call a foghorn. What I mean is that the Amora himself was not capable of projecting his voice. After a while, his voice would get weak. So they set up a meturgamon, and the meturgamon himself had to be a Talmud Chacham, because he had to understand what the Rebbe was saying, so that he could project what the Rebbe was saying to the students. Sometimes he would even add his own comments. And this Yehuda bar Nachmeni was on such a high level, he was appointed as the meturgamon of no one less than Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish and his generation, together with Rabbi Yochanan, were the two giants of their generation. So this Yehuda bar Nachmeni is a very high, how should I say, high-powered meturgamon. And they put a, I guess you'd call it, they did a ploy. What was the ploy? Kum Ale Be'amora, that judge that was appointed by some members of the Bein Nasiya, and he's not an expert. He really doesn't know his law. Kum Ale Be'amora, you serve for the time being, just until we accomplish that goal, as his Amora. So come. So Yehuda bar Nachmeni gets up and Gochen Ale. What he does is he bends over. Gochen is to bend. Ale means over him. And he's listening with his ear to hear what this Dayan is about to say. Velo Amale Velo Midi. And he had nothing to say. In other words, what they did was they set up Yehuda bar Nachmeni in a way that he would say something that Ke'ilu, as if he had heard from this Dayan, who's really an ignoramus, and he's going to say things in his name that he never said. And the reason why he never said is because he didn't know what to say. And what did he say? Pasach, he opens up the Omar, and he quotes a pasuk at the end of Tanakh in Habakkuk. It says over there, "Hoy, Omer le'etz hakitza." This pasuk is really addressing the idol worshippers. And woe is it to someone who turns to wood. What's wood in this context? An idol, a wooden idol. Hakitza, wake up. Or he turns to a stone and he says, "Uri, wake up." Uri le'evan dumam. Dumam means it's an inanimate object. So the eitz or the evan cannot really hear what he's saying. Hu yoreh, which literally means he will teach us, means what we're saying is turn to the idol, tell the idol to wake up, and the idol's going to teach us. Hine hu tafu zav akesef. Really what he's holding on to is a piece of gold or silver. V'chol ruach ein bekirbo, but there's no wind, there's no life inside of it. So you have various kinds of idols. Anybody know how to say an idol in Yiddish? I'm not sure if it's Yiddish, it's probably Polish or one of the other. Getschke. So you learned a word from me today. So if you're taking Opan in Yiddish, you'll give Rabbi Berzon credit for teaching you a word about idolatry in Yiddish. It's called a getschke. And the Yiddishists use Geshka for anything that a person worships, even if it's not an idol. You know, when you put up someone on a pedestal, oh, he's your Geshka. In any event, the Geshkas were made up of one of four different materials. Either wood, stone, silver, or gold. And the emphasis here in our context is the silver and the gold, because silver and gold mean money. In this case, it means bribery. So this judge, in quotation marks, in inverted commas, like this judge bought his way in to the position of judge. He paid money to be a judge, right? And he probably had to pay more money. If in England, you have to wear a wig, you know, if you're a judge. So he had to pay extra money for the wig, for the sheitel. Anyway, so now it has like it, so. What did they accomplish here? Basically, Yehuda is saying in an indirect way, you know, he's hiding it behind the pasuk, that this judge bought his way in and he got the position of judge. He was appointed based on kesef v'zav, on silver and gold, but really knows nothing about paskening a din. And therefore, talking to him is like talking to a piece to a geshka who can't respond. And this is what they did in order to trick those members of the Nesias who capitulated to this bribery, apparently, and they appointed a judge who did, well, the last thing he was worthy of was being a judge. The Asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lipara Mimamidon, and ultimately God will take will punish. Will mete out punishment to those who appoint such a judge. Shenemar, as it says there in Habakkuk, and the very next pasuk, Hashem beheichal kodesho has mi panav kol haaretz. God is in His holy place, His heichal, and has mi panav kol haaretz. He will destroy anyone who stands up and tries to. Appoint a judge who's not worthy of judgment. Here we have a comment to the Marsha. The Marsha writes, "Elu hagormim shashem yishar beheichal kodesho." Those who appoint a judge who's not worthy to be a judge, they cause God to remain in His heichal kodesho. He's not going to come into the courtroom. Normally, we say Hashem nitzav adaskel, that the Shechina enters into the courtroom. Here, the Shechina is going to remain in its sanctified place. And as a result, if you have a world without God, it's going to bring about a churban, a destruction. Omer Eish Lakish, again on this topic, apparently this was a real issue, even back in the time of the Gemara, of people who are not worthy, and yet they achieved through different illegal methods they had appointment as a judge. Kol ha'mamid dayon sheino hagun, anyone who's in charge of this situation where he appoints a judge who's not worthy to be a judge, ki'ilu notea asherah b'Yisrael, it's as if he plants An Asherah. Does anybody know what an Asherah is? Correct, it's an Avodah Zarah tree. Shenemar, as it says, again, Avodah Zarah here, because again, judgment is the divine presence. If you bring in a judge who's not worthy, you're really, in a sense, exiling the Shekhinah. And that's a denial of God. That's tantamount to worshipping an idol. Now, where do we see any connection between judgment, in the case of Shoftim, and worshipping an Asherah? Shenemar, the Pasuk has what you call a smichus. What does smichus mean? When two verses or two things are contiguous one to the other. That's called smichus. Shenemar, the Pasuk opens up Arsha Shoftim, and it says, Shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha. You should appoint judges in all your gates and all your cities. V'samechle, and it says in the very next, actually it's two psukim later, it says, Lo sita lecha asherah kol eitz. You should not plant a tree that's meant and designated for idol worship. So if somebody violates this great mitzvah of Shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha, that you should appoint proper judges who are worthy of judgment, and if you violate that, then lo sita, it's in effect as if you violated the planting of an Avodah Zarah tree, of an Asherah tree. Now the opposite is true. When a person is near and located in close proximity to a scholar who is teaching the truth, then he's close to the Shekhinah. He's close to the place where the God's presence is found. Where is it on the face of the earth that we can definitely find God's presence located? In which house? In the Beit HaMikdash. Now within the Beit HaMikdash, there's a place called the Mizbeach. The Rambam says that the essence of building a Beit HaMikdash and its goal is the Mizbeach, is to bring Karbanot that create a friendship or reinstate the friendship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch. He says, "B'makom sheyesh talmidei chachamim," when you have honest-to-goodness judges, scholars, who are transmitting the word of God in a very sincere and genuine way, then ki'ilu nita'o eitzal mizbeach. If you get close to a Talmud Chacham, and if you set a Talmud Chacham up in a place where he can transmit Torah, it's as if you planted him right next to the Holy of Holies, the Mizbeach itself. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, and I'll read the whole Pasuk, it says, Lo sita lecha asherah kol eitz. You should not plant an Asherah tree, eitz al Mizbeach Hashem Elokecha, near the Mizbeach. And the Talmud Chacham is the opposite situation. It's like he sets up a Talmud Chacham next to the Mizbeach. Again, getting back to the case of someone who's not worthy of judgment and he somehow won his appointee to be appointed as a judge. Ksiv, the Torah says in the Aseres HaDibros, it says, Lo tasuni ti Elohei kesef Elohei zav. And the question is, why does the Torah mention the idols that are made out of silver and gold, Elohei kesef Elohei zav, hu delo avdi? Is the Torah implying, this rhetorical question, that you shouldn't set up an idol made of either silver or gold? The eighth shari, but if you set up an idol that was made of wood, shari means that's mutter. Rav Ashi says no. You have to darshan this. We're talking about a case of appointing a judge who's not worthy of judgment. Eloha haba b'shvil kesef. Ve'aloha habav shvil zahav. This is like an idol that was set up because of either silver or gold. It means we're talking about a dayan, and people look up to a dayan, to a judge, and he was appointed because he paid either silver or gold. He bought his position. Okay. Now we begin a discussion about what's called svaga. Svaga means when one person lords it over another person. He says, look, I'm a dayan, I'm a judge, and you're just a plebe, you know, you're just a lower echelon person. And in the context of this discussion, the most important ethical principle, or shall we say ethical character trait, is anava, is humility. And it's interesting, Rav on the one hand was the greatest judge in his time, but at the same time he was the greatest, most humble person in his time. So Gemara tells us a story about Rav. Rav, ki avi asi, when he came lebeit dina, into the courtroom, Omar Hachi, he would say about himself, Bereus nafshi, Reus always means ratzon, the will, like we say in Be'an Arachitz. Bereus nafshi, I willingly, on my own, nobody forced me, liktala nafik, I'm sending myself out to death. When you decide to send yourself out to death, what's that called in one word in English? Suicide. In other words, Rav describes himself as a suicide case. That's a pretty heavy comment, is it not? Why is he a suicide case? Because he's going into judgment. And when you go into judgment, wow, that's a very dangerous proposition. Tzvi Basi, all the needs of the calling, so to speak. Tzvi means the callings, but it means the needs, Basi, of my household. Less who the of it. He's not involved in them. Notice he's not helping out with his wife at home. He's going out to judgment early in the morning. He's going to come home exhausted at night. V'reikon lebeisei oil. Normally when a person goes out in the morning, he comes back in the evening, at least he brings home with him what? Some bread, right? I don't mean literally bread, but also literally bread, right? He has money, he gets paid. But says Rav, v'reikon empty lebeisei, to my house, oil. I come back, I return to my house without a penny in my pocket. And this is based on the halacha that a judge is not allowed to take money for, you know, what we call a wage, a salary. Ulevai shetehe bia ki yitzia. Falevai means have, I hope, I only hope that my bia, meaning when I come back home and I enter into the house, that's called bia, should be like my yitzia. Like when I went out of my house towards the court. And there are two interpretations here. One says I should be alive when I come home, just as I was breathing when I came in, because again, if I chas v'sholom, if I profane the justice, if I what's the word I'm looking for? If I violate what was
pervert.
Oh, excellent. If I pervert justice, then I'm going to die for that, as we saw before. The other interpretation is that he's saying, just like I went out without sin, I should come back without sin, I shouldn't make any mistakes in judgment, and I'll get punished for that. But where is the humility of Rav? Well, one element to the humility of Rav we saw here, that Rav is so afraid. I mean, why does Rav have to be afraid? After all, he's the great Rav, the greatest judge in his time, but he has humility. But his humility reaches its pinnacle in the next part of the story. Chazi, when he saw, Chazi is saw, that's a word you should write down if you're not familiar with it, because that'll appear all over the place. Chazi, to see, or Chazinon, we see. Chazi, when he would see, Ambuha Abasre. Ambuha is a great crowd, a crowd of people, a massive amount of people, like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you drive by something and you see a whole congregation of people, either because something happened, they're rubbernecking, or because there's a demonstration. Today, you know, demonstrations are very much in style here in Israel. They were, when I was a kid, the only demonstrations they had was against Chil Shabbos. So my father once found a group of, let's call them ultra-Orthodox Jews, they were throwing stones at cars. So he said, you shouldn't throw stones. So they said, no, we're not throwing stones, we're throwing apples. As if you can't kill someone with an apple, you know. Anyway, so there were demonstrations going on. So Rav turns around, or maybe he saw through his mirrors, the rear movie. He sees an entire congregation, an assembly, Abasrei. Abasrei means following him, right? Behind him. And why are these people following him? Because he's the great Rav. And any great rabbi is always escorted by his students and by his admirers. Rav realized at that moment that he was in a danger of what we call gava, of being conceited. It would go to his head. Look at this massive amount of people who are his entourage. Amar, so he declares, based on a pasuk in Iyov, Im yalel ha-shamayim si'o, if a person reaches the apex of his career, yale, he goes up, la-shamayim, all the way to the heavens, si'o, to the pinnacle. It's like if you climb Mount Everest, so you reach the top of Mount Everest, and you think you're a big shot. I mean, after all, who walks the streets and they flock behind you? Kiglolo lenetzach yoved. Because he lets this go to his head, he will be destroyed. Yoved means he will completely be vanquished. Lenetzach, forever. Kiglolo. Does anybody know what golol is? It's not a very pleasant word. It's like I always give the example. It's great to greet grandparents, and when your children come for Shabbos with their children, it's wonderful. Until it's time to change the diapers, all of a sudden you change the diaper. I went through that, you know. Okay, there are occasionally grandparents who are willing to change diapers, but anyway, the word galal is really changing diapers. Galal is feces. So imagine Rav quotes a pasuk in Iyov to warn himself, so to speak, to not let this situation go to his head, because if it does, ultimately he will be destroyed. So Rav is afraid of two things. Number one, he's afraid of misjudging, and therefore he's like, he sees himself almost like a suicide case, and he's not even getting paid for it. Chutch, at least if he was bringing home a salary. And number two, Rav is afraid of letting this situation get to his head. You know, he's the chief judge, and people are walking behind him. They, you know, they treat him like a getchka, if you remember that word. And he's afraid it'll make him conceited. He'll be very he'll have a heavy head. So he's talking to himself, Rav, by quoting this pasuk in Iyov. You know, sometimes if you're in a situation of danger and you repeat to yourself over and over again a pasuk that warns you about that danger in a moral sense, then he's able to overcome any temptation. Marzucha Chasida. Marzucha was a chassid. That's they attached that appellation to his name. This is before the Baal Shem Tov. Ki havi mekatfile, when they would carry him on their shoulders. You know, he left his house on his way to the court to judge a case, and they would actually carry him on their shoulders. Unbelievable cover that they gave him. Now, why was he on his way? So I said to you that he was on his way to judge. But not only that, there are situations in which he's on his way to teach, to transmit the Torah. And three times a year, once every couple of months, when it was time for a festival, he, Rav Chisda Chasida, was the chief lecturer. He would give the drasha, he would give the main sermon, the Shabsa de Rigla, on the Shabbos of the Regel. Now some say this is what we call Shabbos Chol HaMoed. Others say it was during the Regel itself. People came up to be with Rav Chisda and his Beis Medrash, and he would deliver the main lecture. Now, when you give the main lecture, you know, they put you up on a podium, they carry you on their shoulders, the whole community needs to hear what you have to say. You know, there's a burning issue. Or, for example, in Pesach, you know, people have all sorts of questions about pots and pans, about chametz that fell in, about goyim that brought them chametz during Pesach, what should they do with it, about gebrachts, if you're makvid on nati truya, and all the different myriad issues. So the drasha that would answer all these questions, people would fire questions at the rabbi, was very well attended, and Rav Chisda was given the honor of, as the chief scholar in town, of addressing all these issues. So he was afraid that after carrying him, if they carried him into the Beis Medrash to give the, or Beis Knesset to give this lecture on their shoulders, Omar Haki, he would quote a different pasuk. He would say over to himself, probably over and over, like a refrain of pasuk in Mishlei, "Ki lo li olam chosen." Now, chosen really means strength, what we call in Hebrew chosek. And a person who thinks he's in a very strong position, he thinks it's always going to be like that, you know, as if he's guaranteed forever and ever. Lo li olam chosen. Shlomo Melch warns us, don't think that because now you're in an upward, you know, you're on top, It's not liolam. V'im nezer l'dor v'dor. If you're wearing a crown, you'll think that it's l'dor v'dor. It's for all generations. Realize that just like you're not going to live forever, so too all of this chizuk, you know, the strength that people are giving you, and they're carrying you, and they're respecting you with great esteem, that's not guaranteed forever. Dorash bar kapara. Now we're talking about a smichus, again, a two continuous psukim. The last pasuk in Parshas Yisro addresses the case of the malos, meaning the steps that lead up to the mizbeach. And the very next pasuk, which is the first pasuk of Mishpatim, addresses the judges. So what's the significance of walking up the steps? Those are the steps that the Kohen would climb to get to the mizbeach. The mizbeach was high up. Dorash bar kaplai, minaha milsa, what's the source? Mina, from whence? Ha, this, milsa, this word, meaning this piece of Torah. The Amri Rabbanan, which is incorporated in the Mishnah in Avos. Hevu misunim badin. A judge has to be very careful when he judges, not to come to any rash, quick decisions. What's the source for that? The Mishnah doesn't quote a source. So bar kapara darshins it from this smichus aparshios. The Torah says lo sale b'malos al mizbechi, and Bakara interprets this as follows. Literally, it translates, "Don't climb the steps to get to my mizbeach," but he translates, "Don't rush up the steps to get to the mizbeach." When you're talking about the mizbeach and you're involved in the holiest of efforts here, then you don't rush up. If you rush up, it indicates that you're not machshev it. You don't give it chashivus. And immediately afterwards it says v'yelam mishpatim. So when you're sitting down as a in mishpat as a judge, then you have to do it b'misinus. Misinus means avu misuna b'din. You have to be very painstaking and slow about your decision, and not rushing through it. Omer Rabbi Eliezer, minayin l'dayan shlo yifsa al rashi am kodesh. The Gemara quotes this for two reasons. Number one, it deals with a dayan, a judge. Number two, it again derives a halacha from the smichus between lo sala b'malas, don't climb up the steps, and v'yela mishpati. So number one, we're addressing the dayan. Lo yifsa, he should not step, or maybe trample, al rashe am kodesh, on the heads of the people of Israel. Am Kodesh means the rank and file. When a judge walks into court and everyone is sitting down and he rushes up towards the podium, you know, towards the place where he sits as a judge, it looks like he's, if you see him from the back, it looks like he's stepping on people's heads. In other words, he doesn't have the respect that he has to have for the people. And if he has respect for the people, he's not going to be the last one to come into the courtroom. He's going to be the first one to come into the courtroom. Because otherwise, if he's the last one, it looks like he's trampling on the heads of the audience, of the people sitting in the courtroom. Shenemar al lo sala b'malos. You should not climb up the steps. So again, the only thing I can tell you here is that lo sala b'malos means that when you climb the steps, every time you hit the next step, you put your foot down in a very forceful way. And you're certainly climbing on top of something. Again, in this case, you're climbing on top of the steps and projecting yourself to move forward. Now, if you climb on top of the steps, you're not insulting anybody. But the very next pasuk says, "Eila mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem," and that's referring to the judges. So, Bar Kapara interprets this that the judges are like someone who climbs up steps. If the judge comes into the courtroom last, and everyone else in the audience is sitting down, then it's going to look like he's stepping on their heads. He hasn't manifested the kind of esteem and respect that he's obligated to do so towards the rank and file members of Klal Yisrael, the Am Kodesh. Now, since we're learning this pasuk v'yela mishpatim, it says asher tasim lifneihem. You should place them in front of them. And the Gemara is bothered by this. The proper syntax should have been asher tilamdem, that you should teach them mi boile, it should have said. I always point out, especially to people who are beginners in Gemara, that mi boile, which in English would come at the beginning of a sentence, but in Aramaic it comes at the end of a sentence. So it's a little bit tricky for us when we translate the Gemara, and it starts with two words, Asher Talam Deim, and then it says Mibayle. So the Mibayle is really the trick to understand what the Gemara means by Asher Talam Deim. In my Gemara, the words Asher Talam Deim are set aside with quotation marks. Asher Talam Deim, Mibayle. The pasuk should have read as follows: V'ela Mishpatim Asher Talam Deim. And these are the laws, the statutes that you should teach them. Why does it say Asher Tasim Lifneihem? What are you putting in front of them? What is the meaning of putting in front of them? Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah V'itema Rabbi Chiya Barava. Elu, what should be put in front of the judges? Klei Hadayonim, the utensils or the vessels that the judges need. What are the utensils of a judge? So I think in the West, I don't know, maybe this is only in certain countries, the judge has to have a gavel. We don't have gavels, but we do have four instruments that the judges have to bring into the court. And the Gemara is going to explain that based on Rav Huna. Rav Huna ki havi nafek ledina, when he went out, meaning from his house, ledina to judge, Amar Hachi, he would declare the following. Presumably he was talking to those who service him, which are the shamashim. He had a shamash, right? He had in Hasidic circles, they have what's called a hoizbacha. Right? He's in charge of helping out the Rebbe and bringing whatever the Rebbe needs. So Rav Huna's on his way to the court, turns to his Heisbacher, and he says to him, Afikuli, bring out for me money means kalim or vessels, chanusai means of the bezdin. In other words, there were certain utensils that were called the courtroom's utensils, the judiciary utensils. How many were there? Four. What are the four utensils? Number one, makel, a stick. Number two, ritzu, is a strap. Number three is a shofra, which is a shofar. And number four is sandala, which is a sandal. Interesting how similar those two words are. Sandal and sandala. No question they come from Lashon Kodesh. So what are the purposes of these four utensils? Let's go backwards up, because that's a little easier. The case that's very complicated is makel, the stick. The easy case is the last of the four, sandala. Rashi says that we need a sandal for chalitza. And does everybody here know what chalitza is? Please don't be embarrassed. You don't know. So let me explain what chalitza is. If two brothers, one brother gets married to a woman and he dies, and he leaves her childless, then the other live brother, surviving brother, is obligated in one of two mitzvahs. Either the mitzvah of Yibum, which means to marry his sister-in-law and bring children on the name of his late brother, or alternatively, if he doesn't want to marry her, he has to divorce her. But there's no, the normal mechanism of divorce doesn't apply in this context. He can't just write up a get and give her a get. He needs a process which is called chalitza, which means that he's wearing a certain sandal over his shoe, over his foot, and she comes along and she loosens the sandal until finally she brings it down to the floor. Now, in a case where a judge, we need judges for a chalitza, and a judge has to be equipped with a sandal. I think I mentioned to you when we did this the first round, this is just a chazara today, we're reviewing what we learned, is that a sandal has to fit the size of the foot of the yavam, the one who's in charge of Yibum, relatively. In other words, it doesn't have to be an exact custom-made shoe, but it can't be very large on his foot or very small on his foot so that it would fall off, or he can't get his foot in. So in the Bate Dinim here in Eretz Yisrael, and I think it's the same all over the world, they have three sandalim, the one for, it's not one size fits all. It's got the smaller foot, the medium-sized foot, and the larger foot. Anyway, so we have to make sure that the Beit Din is equipped with a sandal in event that we need a quick chalitza. By the way, why are we so urgent to make sure the sandal is there? Why not just call up on the phone and order a sandal and do it a week from then?
You want to have kids right away?
Because if you don't do it right away, he might fly the coop. If he gets lost, then this woman can never get married for the rest of her life. And that's true even today. In the year Tavshin, what are we up to? Tavshin Ayin Tes, we're up to? Yeah. Last I checked, I think it was Ayin Tes. Do you guys, this is one of the tragedies of halacha. You know, halacha, when we were doing kiruv work in NCSY, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, that's a kiruv afresh. So we should, basically the philosophy was, again, I don't mean this literally, but that Judaism is a bowl of cherries. You know, everything about Judaism is a lot of fun. Shabbos is a lot of fun, and Yom Tov, and everything. It's all great. But the truth is that, as my Rebbe used to say, sometimes the symbol of Judaism is the Mizbeach, which means sacrifice. We have to sacrifice. This is one of the most tragic situations of a woman who falls for Yibum, and the Yavam is nowhere to be found. Or, if he's not capable of doing Yibum, he's out to lunch, as we say proverbially. So anyway, we want to make sure if the chalitz is there, he's not going to decide to change his mind or start pressing for money and then bribe. Make sure the sadal is ready over there. Then there's something called shufra. Shofra. Shofra is a shofar. The shofar is meant to announce nidu. Nidu means when they excommunicate a person. It's not full excommunication. That's called a cherem. But it's a quasi-partial excommunication. And you make someone into a menuda. A menuda means he has to be like an ovel, and he has to, he's not allowed to shower, he's not allowed to wear shoes, and we're not allowed to come into business dealings with him, and so forth and so on. And in order to proclaim that he's in a state of nidui, they would blow a shofar. And then the Gemara goes through different kinds of blowings in the shofar, and which one indicates nidui. Then going up the ladder, we have ritsua. Ritsua strap is used for what? For Malkos. So if he violated, let's say, Chazer, he ate non-kosher food in front of two witnesses who gave him a warning, and they told him if he goes ahead and he eats this, he's going to be Chayav Malkos. How many Malkos? 39. There are cases where it's more than 39. If there's an overlap of many different Isurim, then the Gemara has a case of a hornet. Am I pronouncing that right? H-O-R-N-E-T. Hornet is actually a kind of a bee that comes under seven different laven. It's an ov, because it crawls on the ground, and it goes through water, and it flies, and it has every single category of sheretz overlap. So if a person would eat such a thing, chas v'sholem, and that's why if you go to the Far East, they eat everything there, you know. Now, I went to the Far East with my wife. She was curious. Every time we passed, every few feet, you see what they're serving there, you know, because they eat outside there. Have you been to Thailand? Yeah, there's no such thing as eating at home. Nobody eats at home. Everybody eats in the streets. And you have to smell it. Like, it's just an unbelievable smell. So I didn't appreciate that, but my wife is very curious. She wanted to see what kind of bugs they eat and stuff like that. Anyway, if you eat a bug with an Edom and Asra, you can be high of six or seven malchus. You know, it's very hard. I don't know. But they use the strap. The strap was made of either an eagle or a chabar of certain animals. And it wasn't too devastating, you know. And also the person who was in charge of giving malchus, he wasn't the strongest guy in the world, you know, who might hit you a little bit too hard. That's if he violated a d'oraisa. Like, for example, he ate chazer. Makel, Rashi says, is used for makas mardus. That means he violated an isa d'rabanan. And let's say, for example, we gave the case of basar of becholav, right? Chicken and milk. We pass on Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it's only derabbanan. So he got hasra, he gets makas mardus, if he did it deliberately. And Rashi says that the makel, the stick, was designated for makas mardus. So the Ritva points out one obvious chiddush here, that the judge has to be prepared so that he can, once he gives down, if there's, you know, testimony on a criminal case, and he hands down his verdict, that they will immediately implement the punishment. That's the executive branch of the government. So that has to be available. The second chiddush, says the Ritva, it seems from Rashi, makel, which is a very strong club, you know, that they would use that for makas mardus. Now, intuitively, we would have thought that violating a derabanan is a lower criminal violation, and it deserves more compassion. And yet, Rashi identifies the makel as makas mardus. And therefore, the Ritva disagrees. But some say that according to Rashi, if a person rebels deliberately against the rabbanan, that's a very severe isa, because he's denying the authority of the rabbis. And that has to be dealt with immediately and severely. Next, the Gemara darshins now a pasuk at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. Vatzaveh es shovteichem ba'esahi. And I will command the judges at that time. Now the word atzaveh, the root of it is tzav. Tzav is zirus. Zirus means when you want to arouse someone to take care of something with enthusiasm and with urgency, then you use the word va'atzaveh tzav. Om Rav Yochanan kedeged makel ritzua tehek zaris. Meaning that make sure that the judges are equipped with these very frightening and threatening utensils, so that when people come for judgment and they realize in the case of a criminal case that they might suffer the punishment, they'll back off, if you know what I mean. They'll get overwhelmed by fear. Okay. Let's see what time it is. We almost finished what I wanted to do, which is a review of all these Gemaras. Tomorrow, Bli Neder, we'll finish this up. And then starting, I guess, on Tuesday, we're going back to the Gemara itself. What I mean is the Halachic Gemara. You know, we've been taking a long detour here for about, 2 weeks, maybe more, of learning the more philosophical Haggadic statements in the Gemara. And if anyone, you know, I know there are two gentlemen here who've never been in the Shia, so you may find that I moved at the speed of light. I don't usually go that fast, but because this is a review, that's what we did. So we'll continue with our review tomorrow. If somebody could please kindly remind me where we got up to. Shomoa ben Achechem. How many lines up is that from the bottom? About 10 lines up from the bottom, correct?
9 lines.
Does anybody, I would write this down on a piece of paper. Does anybody have paper here? Maybe the back of this? No, this is... Alright, I'll find a piece of paper. Oh, okay, thank you. So, we're up to Daf Zayin Amud Beis, and about 10 lines up from the bottom, and we're going to start with Shomoa Ben Achechem, okay? And you may remember that there's a law that the judges can't hear one claim in the absence of the other litigant. They both have to be there simultaneously. All right, gentlemen, I wish you a great day. If anyone wants to learn a little Mishnah Berurah, let me know. And Mr. Shem will pick it up tomorrow.